Welcome to the 232 podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Carl.
This podcast is about books, reading, and the meaning of life.
Today we unpack another book because you know what they say.
Too many books.
Too little time.
Just so small rectangular objects, they're called books.
Welcome to the 232 podcast. I'm Sean, and I'm going to pretend to be Carl today because Carl's not here. But I've got my good friend here, Mark Ramby, who's joining us today on the podcast, and we're going to talk about reading in a very interesting angle, I think, based on our earlier conversation. But welcome, Mark.
Yeah, awesome, Sean. Great to be here. Yeah. I'm excited about having a bit of a yarn about reading.
That's good. I know it's something that you're really passionate about, which is what makes this a really good conversation to have. So, so today we're going to, I think we're going to dabble in the worlds of fiction, non-fiction, children's books, high-performance sport, and all things in between. So we'll get started. Do you want to just give us a bit of your background, Mark? Because you've had a very long and successful sporting career, but I think there's other parts of your background that people might not know about, so.
Yeah, no, I obviously, have loved sort of growing up in New Zealand and sort of was born in Potaruru in the South Waikato. My dad's a retired Presbyterian minister, so we'd sort of were there. He had a parish there in Potaruru, and then, we moved down to Alexandra in central Otago, which is a pretty cool spot to, well, both Potaruru and Alex, sort of smaller town, New Zealand, growing up there. And mum was sort of mum initially, but got into teaching as well. So she helped out at Dunstan High and Alex. Mm-hmm. She loved her art, did a bit of painting, but also musically. She ended up being my head of music at Freiburg High School in Palmerston North. We moved to Palmy when I was about 10, so you had 7 years in Alex. So I don't know, really fortunate to grow up in a really loving, supportive home where books were a big part of both mum and dad's lives and valued, I guess, reading. So kind of to have that, I guess, modelled from a really young age. And I remember, wandering into dad's study and the walls being lined with books. They just kind of were around. So, I think that definitely had an imprint on me growing up, and I guess language as well. Dad and sitting, I guess, in church and listening to him preach as a kid. And growing up, we had often talk about the etymology of words. He'd sort of studied Greek and Latin as part of his studies to become a minister. So, words and their meaning, were always important. I think that sort of obviously washed over me as a young fella, and certainly starting at school, I enjoyed getting into English and language as well. So that became, I enjoyed it at school and enjoyed sort of learning a bit of te reo Māori as well at school, that language thing coming through, which was, which I really enjoyed. Dabbled in a bit of French, I think. Yeah. Did some classical studies as well. I think I had a crack at biology at sixth form and did a bit of stats as well. But very much sort of history, English. Sort of as I got to my senior years, and then when I went to university, sort of did an English degree at Massey, whilst my sort of rugby sort of took off, for the opportunity. Rugby turned professional the year I left high school.
Oh, wow. So 1996.
So I finished, finished Freiburg in 95, and then, rugby's professional. So I'd enjoyed cricket growing up as a young fella as well, and then at Freiburg got into my athletics. So sort of, got into my triple jump as well, which was really cool. And I kind of learnt, we often train sort of 4 or 5 nights a week. So I think it was almost through my athletics that I learnt a bit of the application around training. And then, obviously, rugby turning pro, and managed to make the Manawatū team in that 96 year. So started earning money from playing footy.
Yeah.
And then fortunately played well enough to make the Hurricanes the following year in 97. Got a few starts. Remember sort of coming on for Alama Itamir at Athletic Park in Wellington with the big Millard stand.
Wow.
And the team was sort of going pretty well at that stage. And I'm sort of 19 going, wow, this is pretty crazy. So, really enjoyable. And then made the move back up to Waikato, got an opportunity to play for the Mulus and the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I suppose in a sporting context, being selected for the All Blacks in 2001 was sort of, I guess, a realisation of a dream I'd had as a kid.
Yeah.
And so you had my one test against Manu Samoa up at Albany, which was, yeah, amazing to sort of be in that environment and around some, you know, players that I obviously competed against but looked up to as well was quite surreal. For a while, I think as a new All Black, or when you go into any team, there's that sort of trying to fit in and trusting yourself, I think, or realizing that you've been selected, you've obviously been picked, that you've shown something, but finding your feet is always challenging.
Gaston, may I have my book, please?
I always remember you being around at Massey, and do you play for the Massey?
Yeah, I played for the club that first year.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and I was fortunate enough to make like New Zealand under 19s. So I bounced around a bit. But yeah, it was really awesome to play club, and I was sort of that, fresh faced young fella sort of getting to know some of the university lads
Like, you finished your degree?
I managed to do I think a couple of years full time. Sort of, once I made the Hurricanes that second year, I think I pulled back a little bit, but I managed to do the sort of 3-year degree in 5 years. Yeah. So I think it was great that I was able to post my footy career, I kind of had this aspiration to move into sort of personal development, which was a position that was sort of created in rugby sort of around that sort of 2000, 2001, mm-hmm. which was, an acknowledgement of this career has a limited sort of time frame, and that there will be plenty of life afterwards. So how do we have conversations with athletes about what other interests they have, and how do you, being allocated some time during the week to explore that, which was something I was really passionate about. Obviously, I sort of learned a musical instrument at high school through mum's influence and sang in the choirs. And I think I had 3 overseas trips at Freiburg, my high school, that were not to do with sport. One was with the Māori, the Kapahaka group.
Yeah.
One was sort of with the music group, and then another one was sort of to an environmental conference in Hawaii, which was pretty crazy. So these other aspects of myself that were encouraged, at school had always been really important.
Just
that encouragement to explore other areas or things that do give you joy, I think I was really fortunate in that aspect.
Books, I need my books.
So we met, I think, you were working in that, the player development role with the rugby union. That was with Canterbury at the time, wasn't it?
That's right. And it was interesting how that sort of came about, because I'd identified that maybe teaching was a good way when I was playing. So I used a bit of my time to go into sort of primary classrooms. And when I got injured, I did a bit of relief teaching at St. Paul's Collegiate. So I tried to get some experience in that space. And my mum, after she'd sort of been a secondary or head of the music department, sort of got involved at Massey through advisory role and supporting teachers. And she started to see your competent teachers around the traps, that she asked where they'd studied, and they'd studied at the Grad School of Education in Christchurch. Mm-hmm. And so she recommended that I head down to Christchurch and study there.
Yeah.
So, which was awesome, and it's an amazing program. That's slightly different from the College of Education, where they come and observe you a lot more in the classroom. And it's very much about that practice of a couple of weeks block work, and then you're in the classroom for a good, you know, 5 to 6 weeks, getting that practice element up. And yeah, I found it really tough, and I did the primary course and battled away and eventually decided to leave without the qualification, which was a big step. I was starting to just really struggle, and probably, you know, with in the mental health space as well, just really just not being able to see my way through it. And it was a real, I guess, relief, obviously, when you stop doing something that is stressful. It does feel a bit better. But I kind of was then in that kind of those feelings of failure, and I felt like I'd never really quit anything you know, particularly from a performance in a high performance sport environment. You know, it's about finding the way, or work a bit harder, or just keep at it, persevere, show the grit. All these things are sort of talked about. But when I was in an environment where I felt like I was trying to do those things, then I didn't feel like I was rising. I was actually, you know, going sort of finding that I was sort of going further under. It was a big kind of, I felt like a big decision, but it felt right when I was out of it. And it happened to be in Christchurch at that time when the personal development role with the Crusaders and Canterbury became available. I sort of applied and got excited and initially missed out. But within about 4 or 5 months, the person that they'd appointed was sort of doing the manager's role for the Crusaders. And they asked if I could come in to support him. And then within a week, he'd been named the new sort of Crusaders manager. And I was asked to stay on full time with the Crusaders and Canterbury in the personal development role. So that was, it was crazy how things worked out. And if I hadn't been in Christchurch, maybe I wouldn't have had that opportunity to apply. And
what is this obsession people have with books?
It's an interesting backdrop to the conversation we're going to have, because the player development role. I mean, it's evolved. I guess it's evolved and kind of professionalised and got some shape.
I think we've been really fortunate in New Zealand, I think, with both perhaps the New Zealand Rugby Players Association, but also New Zealand Rugby, or the union, that there was this acknowledgement as the game went professional that, I guess, it's that caring sort of for the athlete, that
as a person
you know, that there needs to be some support there to assist them to certainly try and bring all of themselves to their rugby career, but also there's a lot of life to be lived. How do you, I guess, maximise the opportunity? Mm. Really, really fortunate, obviously, when the game went professional, that you're going to be remunerated for doing something that you love. How do you look after that aspect, and try and set yourself up? But also, like we were saying earlier, the what other interests do you have? How can you maybe start to think about some of the skills that you might develop during your rugby career, and what they might look like in a different context? And is there a way to maybe get some work experience or go into other contexts and environments to see how they tick? Or is it business, or are you interested to see how that operates? How can you, I guess, continue to learn? And I think reading, you know, this podcast, you know, how can reading or listening to podcasts help with that too,
exactly,
you know? Yeah,
exactly.
There's so many tools, I think, now at people's disposal to explore. Is it a TED talk, or, you know, to actually, just fuel those interests.
Yeah. You've had that lived experience of transitioning, you know, into a high-performance sport, but also environment, but transitioning out and then working with others who are in that environment with a view of what does it look like outside that environment. So and a lot of young guys, I imagine, as well, who are very much, you know, like almost fresh out of high school and straight into, you know, the sporting environment. We were talking earlier about the role of books and you know, really interested in what sorts of I threw that question at you, like is there a book that's really changed the way you think? But I mean, you've got a couple of books.
We were chatting a bit earlier. I mean, I talked to and tried to think when you posed that question to me, like narrowing it down to one you know, is it possible? What have been influential books? And it was interesting that I landed on Dr. Seuss's My Many Coloured Days, which
amazing.
Yeah, which is I guess you'd perhaps say is a children's book, but I stumbled onto it in London at an art gallery.
Yeah.
So, you know, Mum had always been, you know, big on art, and I think, yeah, it's cool to have that. I think both Mum and Dad kind of fostered that curiosity to use these wonderful sort of public institutions that we have. So when I'd be away on rugby tours, I'd sort of be hunting out a museum or a gallery to go and have a look at, because I do like that kind of what constitutes greatness, you know, so why have these pieces of arts been valued, or what are they trying to say about, you know, the human experience? So it was sort of funny that I found it in that, you know, in that space.
Yeah.
But it really spoke to me because it was sort of published after Dr. Seuss's death. And so other artists, often his, you know, he illustrated his own works. And so that was, and his style was very, you know, just so well known. But then to see other artists take his words. And basically the book is about how we experience, you know, so many emotions, you know, potentially through a day, through a week or whatever, and putting it, using animals and colour to really represent those different emotions and kind of how some days I feel happy you know, and I'm flying around, I'm like a buzzy bee, or some days I feel low and slow and way down and I'm like a bear, sort of, you know, just dragging the weight of the world sort of through the day, and then some days it's a mixed up day and I don't know who or what or where I am kind of thing. And then I love the last page sort of talks about, but it all turns out all right, you see, and I go back to being me. And the sort of images of a almost like a sort of
tapestry,
person cut out, but the different emotions and colors of that person in behind, for me, which I think as I've continued to read and I guess continued through my life, I think speaks to me about how we are enough, who we are. I think we've often talked about, and when you're in high performance, I think environments or work environments, potentially there's this striving to be better. And sometimes I think in the chase or the aspiration to be better, we can sometimes get drawn away from what we actually are and what we bring. And so things
that just the single-minded focus on whatever it is, whether it's a sport parlance or a business, that's success, is that thing?
What is success, or what constitutes a life well lived? which sort of kind of floats into some of the books I've been reading recently, and one of which is Carnival Sky by Owen Marshall, which sort of looks at a middle-aged man returning back. It's based in Alexandria, but his father's dying of cancer, and he sort of feels a bit lost. He's suffered enormous loss in losing a child to cot death, and his relationship hasn't been able to survive that. And he's a journalist, but he's sort of at a stage of his career where he's just decided to leave it and sort of explore, maybe do a bit of freelancing, but it's very much up in the air. But sort of returning home and supporting his dad and his sister, who is a doctor, and sort of those, the kind of homecoming nature of it, returning to relationships of people that have been important in his life. I guess he just exploring, healing somewhat himself or getting on a path where, he starts to feel okay with perhaps where he is or maybe the losses that he's endured, that he can actually live with those rather than maybe he's tried to shut those things off and because they've been too big to deal with.
I'm sorry, excuse me, did I just see you smell that book?
You read a lot of fiction, don't you? So fiction's had a funny place on our podcast because it's very hard to talk about fiction without breaking the story open. But that said, you know, we're always encouraging people to read fiction because it quite often gets painted as, oh, it's a really nice story, but the stories are the things that connect with people. Like, how does what's your love of fiction? Like, where do you think
I think it is exactly what you say. I think, storytelling, and we know that this, I mean, there's a lot of talk about this, I think, even in business now, or, you know, marketing, you know, it's all about the story, you know, because I think it's the realization that evolutionary wise, stories have been a big part of how we've,
sort meaning, of transfer
meaning, knowledge. I think, meaning, you know, meaning, yeah. you know, is really, really important. I think if you look at, I guess, the sporting context, and I think certainly a lot of the talk about, obviously, Scott Robertson, is that he's able to, as part of the environment, create a bit of a story or an arc or a theme that connects people. So I think he's really understood that from how it can be utilized in a performance setting. So for me, I guess it's always been, that it's particularly with characterization too, that it is an opportunity, I guess, like going back to a piece of art that reflects somewhat
something to connect to, isn't
it? That emotion or even though it's potentially, I think it's often said, oh, it's made up. Is it based in reality, or that somehow it's? But I feel like sometimes fiction has truer things to say to us than what's termed fact, or what's non-fiction. Yeah. So I've loved that element about it, but particularly around what people experience and how authors are able to, really, I don't know, dig into that. Those questions around sort of being and meaning and represent relationship. I think, that's really important. And particularly, I guess, from, the work that I've, found myself in working with players, absolutely. I think that relationship piece. And even with teaching, fortunately, I didn't come out of the New Zealand Graduate School of Education empty-handed. I met my wonderful and beautiful wife, Sarah, there. Yeah. Particularly, I think my family was stoked that, that it facilitated that sort of meeting and that relationship, our relation began there. Sarah as a teacher, one of the, I think it's in a lot of things that unless there's the relationship is foundational to effective teachers. I think it's a respectful relationship. It's not sort of a friendship, but there's a respect there and an understanding or an interest, a curiosity in the individual that I'm working with. And what are they into, and how can I use that to bring some learning or, leverage off that interest to highlight something or take them on a journey where they feel that there's progression and that I think that's what I admire about, Sarah, is that in a subject like English that's compulsory, it's opening up, I think, sometimes a closed off attitude.
It was very much, you read this book and you read this poem and you do this, and it wasn't an opening up to what is out there and the possibilities of how to.
Well, I think it's so important. Like we talked about, I guess, how do we grow? Reading some stuff about that reading for pleasure is really important for young people, or how do we try and foster that? Because it can serve you, as you grow in through life, it's always there. It's a skill to process information, even understanding, developing some of that critical thought that comes later, or a perspective on a text, or trying to dig into the meaning, or like we've talked about, making connections from what might seem quite disparate things, but actually are talking or that and become a tapestry or a weave to give you some understanding. Yeah.
Books. I need my books.
Because you've read so diversely, you know, you were pulling on threads of all sorts of things, which is where I was playing around with it a little bit at the start. But so, yeah, you mentioned that, for example, that Dr. Zeus book, you had read that with young professional rugby players, which some people would go, what?
I think it's really fascinating as a teacher too. It's quite interesting that I think reading too is quite a calming. You know, I think even at school there would often be times the teacher might read to, and obviously, you know, when you are young and start at school, and when I was training to be a primary teacher, the big book is a really important thing to introduce, you know, an idea or a theme to young people. So it's kind of, I don't know if you can remember as a kid, you know, there's these things that we can sort of plug into around being read to, and obviously myself, my parents read to me, so these ideas of kind of in your bed, cozy, comfort, safety, and those words sort of washing over you as you fall asleep. Mm. I think, you know, there's those sorts of environments that I think really sometimes as a parent myself, it's like, here we go again. And I'm, but for me, I'm reminded of what my experience was, and I want to give that to my boys so that they, hopefully value and love sort of books and reading as well.
You know, through the work that you've been doing in the sports like realm, have you seen sparks of interest in reading?
Yeah, I think some individuals. I think we also talked about how devices now are a challenge. I think because there's so much you can access on a device.
But it's not the same as slowing down and
reading. I think that's why I get quite passionate about libraries and you know, talking about public institutions before, because I think they are, it's not just the books. I think it's that community sort of sense and value of this place where anyone can go. It's like almost I felt it with playgrounds. Yes. Like I'd never appreciated how awesome playgrounds are until I almost became a dad, a dad, and could play and see that they're free. Like obviously we've through our rates or whatever but anyone can go in it. You don't have to pay anything. You're not, it's not like some other, you know, things you can do with your kids now that you pay to go and have a space. Yeah, that's right. You can go and just enjoy it, and anyone can go and enjoy that. I love that about libraries as well, that you can head along there and for free take books out and you know, and we love going there now with the boys and having a, you know, they're nearly 5 and 8, they can sort of go and explore and pull books out themselves
like that's such an innate ability in children to do that. And yet we find ourselves, you know, 20 years later trying to encourage people to go back to the reading. And
that's right. And that'll be fascinating, I guess, our journey with the boys, but to see what draws their interests away or not away, but hopefully how do you help or sustain that, or maybe they come back, they'll drift off. And because it's really tough that you don't want to impose. I think that's in you when you asked about, I guess, working with athletes too, it's certainly trying to foster that or suggest because you don't, I think as soon as it becomes
You hear of coaches,
an obligation.
There's lots of John Wood and they, you know, like the folklore of handing books around.
Yeah. I remember Eric Rush kind of saying that too, I think in the Sevens environment. Tafo Iwasa, a guy I was fortunate to play with. Tafo talked about how Rushy kind of said that, you know, you're on planes for a long time, why don't you grab a book and have a read, you know, like as opposed to maybe watching a movie, try and actually pick up a good book or, you know, start, you know, so I think sometimes senior players, you know, promoting it is really awesome.
Telling someone to read it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, suggesting here it is, have a go, find one, you know, get into it. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Gaston, may I have my book, please?
Yeah, we were talking earlier about the tension between high performance sport being all about the focus, and you relayed it beautifully. That whole every week there's a score in a team environment, for example. There's a result, and it's all about that. Whereas your role was trying to break open and the roles that you look after are trying to break open the rest of the world and the rest other experiences in a more holistic way.
Yeah.
And the tension between those two things. So it's quite an interesting.
It definitely is that there's obviously a career right here and now, and and obviously there's a real awesome connection for the athlete, because it has been a strength or something that they've developed and been good at. And so, you know, that being part of the identity piece and you know, there's an awareness that sometimes if that occurs too young in an individual and a person, there can be this foreclosure that I then become or I am a rugby player as opposed to I am Mark Ramby and
I play rugby.
Trying to make those connections around what else they enjoy, or things that do energize them away from their, you know, their job, I guess, but this thing that they have ability in and love doing. But how do we, you can't do it 24/7.
No.
I think, you know, you can be kind of, at times you think that's what's going to make you better is provide, you know, devoting more time to it. But I always remember, I guess, when I was at the Crusaders, you know, chatting to Richie McCaw about that, that he kind of spoke about, he'd kind of gone that way at one point, but felt that we could see that it wasn't helping and improving his performance. And so, you know, he's such a thoughtful sort of guy that he was able to work out, right, I've got to do something differently here. And I think that's when his, you know, his flying had been there, his gliding. And so, you know, he was able to realize that those other things that where he could get away from the game and actually get clear air, refresh, reset, meant that he could come back and apply himself, you know, 100% and get sort of what he felt better movement or better progression.
I'm sorry, excuse me, did I just see you smell that book?
What does your reading habit look like now? Like,
yeah, I mean,
it's obviously been a massive part of your life for a long time, which is great.
Yeah, I think I probably drifted away a little bit too through my probably, you know, career and with rugby sort of taking off. I think now I definitely try and, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, sleep and phones and things, and I still struggle with that, like, you know, the depower hour and putting it away. But I do find often if I can read at night before I go to sleep, it sort of helps with that slowing down that we've talked about. So that's often when I will. Sometimes on holidays, I love, you know, really fortunate to visit grandparents that help with the kids, and I can kind of smash into that. Sort of where I read Carnival Sky was over in in Central Otago, actually, up at Queenstown,
which was kind of cool going through it.
Sort of as the colours were sort of coming out in autumn, which was really cool. I love you know, with that, the whole revelation of a title in a book, like particularly fiction, how it sort of just gets dropped in and it feels like the mic drop moment where, oh, that's why it's called, you know, like I love that about, as an author, must be fascinating to come up with. Oh, and I remember that even when I studied English, it was almost like seeing how a story opens. What is that first sentence, or even those words, what does that say about the book? Or, you know, the detail as I studied English around the construction and use of language with writers is phenomenal, that they don't, I think good writers don't waste words. So it's almost like every word has a purpose.
I'm sorry, excuse me, did I just see you smell that book?
There's a couple of key things that I've talked about that you've taken out of our conversation, which is, you know, like read widely, you know, like you've obviously someone that's, you know, reading widely, and that fiction has a really important place. It's great to have that reinforced, I think, because we so often, I think a lot of people in a professional sense feel like they need to be reading non-fiction to be learning all the time, but there's plenty of learning in fiction as well, as you pointed out.
Yeah, and I love that ability too. I think there's, again, been research done around the fact that it builds your empathetic
sort of skills.
Because you're being, I think that's what I love about, like, you can watch a movie and see different characters, but it, with a book, you actually are inside that person's head.
And the one making the connections, aren't you?
That's right. Yeah, that internal, you know, the internal story that goes on for people. You know, sometimes we've obviously got, I don't know for you, but for me, there's often a lot of chatter, a lot of talk going on inside yourself, and you relate to people, and you sometimes you can get in the danger of trying to assume or think, or you are imagining maybe what's going on someone else. But I love that about books, that you kind of get that internal experience of another person is really, I think, particularly for me, what with fiction is really really powerful.
And also reading is a gateway to explore different things, which is really powerful. You know, like you've lived through that experience of having that, you know, almost like single focus for a while, and then who knows where the next steps are. And it's like that with all of us, whether you're an athlete or not, isn't it? It gives you these little threads to pull on and see.
Yeah, and maybe go down and have an explore around what that one entails.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I really appreciate your time today.
Oh, it's nice. Always a pleasure, Sean, catching up and chatting books.
All right, well, thanks to Mark. And that's another episode of the 232 podcast. And we look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you for listening to the 232 podcast.
We'll be back soon with another book, unpacked, distilled, and unhinged.
But until then,
stop, read, and repeat.